We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
670 The Score is the official radio home of Cubs baseball. Listen to all 60 games of the 2020 season here.
It's got a chance! Cubs win!
Live from the Hyundai Studios, this is 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score! Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Castellanos leading off the ninth inning, and he takes inside ball 4. A leadoff walk, not what Kimbrel had in mind. Right-handed pitcher, left-handed batter, Kimbrel to Winker. Inside almost hit him. And that's a wild pitch going all the way back to the screen. He missed his spot by about 3 feet. The pitch. A swing and a miss, strike 3. Did he check or not? Did they say that he did not swing? No, he...
They're saying no swing and he's going to get first base.
Oh, wow.
Ball 4.
And Kimbrel can't believe it. I can't either. Stevenson waits for the 3-2 pitch from Kimbrel. Here it comes. And it's inside ball 4. He has walked in a run. And now it is an 8-7 ball game.
I think he didn't trust his fastball enough tonight for me. I think he can trust that a little more. It was electric. You know, get him back to being who he is. I want him to trust himself. You know, a big thing about baseball is confidence. When you get that confidence to get a couple good outings under your belt, just things seem to roll a little bit better. You trust yourself a little more. You know, you saw JJ tonight, when came in, was humongous for us, really big outs there to pick up this win. That was nice.
Okay.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Cub fans with the little fingernail left after chewing through that inning. That was a tough one, and you heard David Ross there defending him. And, wow, I mean, really a rough outing from Craig Kimbrel, but we've seen some of those rough outings before.
That's all you've seen as a Cub fan from Craig Kimbrel since he arrived last summer, about a year ago. And David Ross is exactly right. All's well that ends well, and you are in this sprint of a season, and you're 3-1, and you have a lot to feel good about. Your starting pitching has been strong and consistent. Your hitting has been obvious. Your offense has been explosive. Your bullpen stinks, and you cannot trust your closer. And when those two things are true, you have to address that immediately. You can't wait for Craig Kimbrel to find his confidence and the strike zone, by the way. 13 of 34 pitches only were strikes. He could not trust his fastball. He could not locate his curveball. All 15 curveballs, you know, were he threw 15 and the red swung at 0, and only 4 were for strikes. So Mully, the next time, whenever Craig Kimbrel is available again, because he threw 34 pitches, it won't be tonight, but the next time the Cubs have a lead and Craig Kimbrel is in the bullpen and David Ross is tempted to go to him to protect that lead, resist it, Rossi, because Jeremy Jeffress is your new closer until further notice. That's the way I'd approach it.
Wow. That is, I mean, that, you know, here's the thing. The fear with making that move is that then you've lost this guy for the season, right?
Well,
I mean, but I'm just saying, don't you have to? I mean, to me, it's shorten the hook, right? So you let him go out there, but you don't let him get in that situation again. When he starts putting guys on base, that's when he comes out and you go to the other guy. I don't know that I would replace him right now, David. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I want another step before I go there because of the velocity.
I think you're right. Yeah, look, I'm not saying I'm wrong. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying I'm reacting. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I understand. I understand what you're saying is absolutely valid because you do have to balance patience with this sort of persistence. And that's difficult to do for any managers, let alone a guy who is in his first season doing it. And he's managing a guy that he scouted and he knows and he caught his major league debut. So Rossi is in a tough spot. But here's what I'm trying to say, maybe a little bit more rationally. If a guy is having a hard time locating his pitches and his curveball and everything else and command and confidence, then maybe it would behoove you to let him try to work it out in lower leverage situations because you have, number one, you do want to shake off the rust, and you owe it to him to let him do that in game situations that are hard to simulate in empty stadiums, really. And number two, I think that you also have a team that looks really good and playoff bound after four games, so where do you strike that balance? I think you've got to maybe not give up on Craig Kimbrell, but maybe give him time in low leverage situations to find his way back to the kind of pitcher that you need him to be.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just don't know that you have the time to do that because the problem with that is when you take a closer and you put him in a non-save situation, what happens, right? It's almost like he's a guy that is trained to be in the high leverage, high intensity situation. And if you put him in a position where it's not in the same kind of crucial moment, does he respond the same way? And you could even adapt that to what happened last night if you wanted to, right? I mean, I think oftentimes when you're talking about closers, you're talking about, well, we got to get him some work because he hasn't been up in how many days, so you want to get him up. And you know, you don't want him pitching himself into a close situation, right, which happens
right
sometimes. So I just think it's more complicated. I listen, we attack these things with emotion, and I think that coming out of that game, you don't want to see that guy again for your own health, for your own mental health,
right,
let alone
right
his, right?
Well, yeah. Molly, when we talk about, you know, careers, in the context of Craig Kimbrell's career, that was a historically bad outing. You know, that was the first time since 2016 that he walked four batters. It was the first time he ever walked four and he hit a batter. So this is as low as it gets when you're in terms of command and control. And I guess that I'm trying to be, as irrational as it may sound, consistent with the approach of the urgency to
right
this season. Because
right
if you're going to treat like a playoff mentality, a football mentality, right, I don't know how you go back to him the next time he has an outing in a safe situation, because you have seen this movie before and you kind of unfortunately know how it ends.
And I think, though, that like with a cornerback, you always talk about, you know, the guy on the island with that same mentality. You get beat once, you can't bring that mentality to the next play. It's almost like that with a closer, right? You have to kind of – I just don't know that you can get away from him yet. I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of people that have seen enough and don't want to see any more. But I'm not sure that's the right answer because of – the urgency of the season because of the limited number of options you have behind him, right? So I don't know. I mean, I don't discredit the idea, but I do think that they don't do it that way in baseball.
They don't typically do it that way in baseball, but this is not a typical season. I think that the Cubs will probably lean more in your direction and be more patient because of the relationship. I think this is where that dynamic does come into play, because I think that David Ross will be more reluctant to remove a guy who he knows as well as he knows Craig Kimbrell. And I think that you can't overlook that aspect of this dynamic. And so But if Jeremy Jeffress had blown that and you know, the Cubs would have I might feel differently about it, but I do think that you have an option and you're living in the moment every single game of this 60-game season. So the next moment where I have to protect the lead, I would be really very reluctant to go to the cleanly shaven Craig Kimbrel until he grows that beard back and gets his bravado back because he's lost it.
312-644-6767. We've got Kevin. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin. Good morning.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. David, when we say, you know, we don't want to lose Craig, Craig is gone. Craig is lost. He's never coming back. That Craig Kimbrel, this is Willie Mays with the Mets. This guy is so freaking done. He was done before the season. This isn't an emotional call from last night, because as you guys will remember, I told you my story about thinking he was going to give up the Grand Slam and end the season the first game to Yelich. It just, he tried to do it last night. But this, this can't go on. This guy is absolutely finished. So whatever injury you have to fake, so him and his gas can leave town, I'm all for it, and I'm good with Jeffress, Wick. When Quintana comes back, go ahead and put Mills in there. Anyone but this guy. Just figure out whatever fake injury, whatever you want to do to get him off this roster. But this is not about last night. As me and Kevbo called it out last year, this guy is totally finished. There is no redemption.
Kevin,
thanks, guys.
Listen, thank you, buddy. Kevin. You're out of your mind, though, because he's never going to give up a Grand Slam. The guy doesn't throw a strike, and he hits people. So
Unless it's a bad ball hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that Kevin raises an interesting point as well, Molly, and I think that we are focused, and I'm fixated on this closer problem because, boy, it was uncomfortable to watch and to listen to the Cubs last night. But, you know, it obscures two different things. Number one, a great outing from John Lester, no hits through five innings, and the offense carried the Cubs again. But it really obscures the fact that they had five relievers that showed up and tried to pitch batting practice between the sixth and the eighth innings and gave up five runs to the Reds and almost blew the lead. And they created a safe situation that Kimbrel tried himself to blow. But this bullpen as a whole has now given you reason to wonder about the Cubs, despite this 3-1 start, how viable they will be because they don't have any relievers that they really, you know, have reason to trust.
Yeah, I listen, you know, that's the takeaway to a large extent. You know, they've had this fantastic start to the season in spite of issues in the bullpen, issues that were predictable in the bullpen. You know, Craig Kimbrel failing last night was predictable before the season began because we kind of saw him failing at the end of last year. And it's real easy to sit there and say that, okay, he shaved, he looks like a different guy, but guess what? He's the same guy that we saw. We are getting the version, the Cubs version of Craig Kimbrel, which is a terrible version of Craig Kimbrel. It's not the winning version of Craig Kimbrel. But I still think that they're not ready to give up on the idea that that he will help them yet. And I think that when you look at how awful it was, you know, David Ross, that is an honest statement he made when he wasn't trusting his fastball. He obviously couldn't locate it, and he got away from it. But the velocity on that thing was pretty damn good. And it was like 3 miles an hour faster than it was a year ago.
That's what you want to cling on to if you are the Cubs, because
right.
And that's why I disagree with what Kevin had to say on his call, because this is a guy hitting 96. It's not a drop off in velocity. I think that says that he isn't done. It's just a matter of command, location, confidence, whatever happens. And Molly, I go back to this, and this maybe seem like a superficial thing, but this is a guy who, you know, comes out to the music and feeds off the crowd, Mr. Adrenaline Junkie, right?
Right.
There was no atmosphere in Cincinnati last night. There's not going to be this season. And we wondered before the season how that would affect guys like Kimbrel. And last night, unfortunately, in a small sample size, we found out in example A, his first outing, that he needs some of the things that he couldn't rely upon last night. And we saw what you got.
That's a good topic of conversation that people need to follow up with players on, right? Because I think we watch these games and they're piping in some crowd noise and you're hearing it. And it's bizarre to see no one in the stands, but it just has this feeling of like, okay, there was the 2 hour rain delay and everybody went home because they got to work in the morning. And, you know, this is what's left in the stadium. Now, obviously, there'd still be a few thousand people left, but it did have that kind of feel to it with the crowd noise. And even as we listened to that, you could hear like, it's kind of funny to hear that noise in the background when you're in a situation where it's just a guy standing in an empty stadium and they're waiting to get back to their hotel to go to bed.
It's so quiet that you could hear the dugout reaction to Albert Almora catching Joey Votto's liner for the final out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the environment that Craig Kimbrell's trying to generate, all this sort of intensity, and he created the drama and then he ended it, but it was more than you needed to, you know, Jeffers had to finish it. But I think that you wonder what effect that has on the psyche of a guy who's used to kind of getting all jacked up.
312-644-6767. Have you seen enough in this early season, in this one outing? Have you seen enough? Or are you ready to go back for more? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It got away from us, I think, a little bit earlier on, and he comes in with he hadn't had work in 6 days, you know, and you know, part of that is just he's got to knock off some rust and then continue to trust his stuff. I thought the fastball was electric tonight. We just weren't in the zone enough. You know, we got to throw strikes, walks, especially in that spot, will kill you. So, yeah, you know, I think I chalk that up to a lot of rust. 6 days for a closer, any bullpen guy. You've seen a lot of the guys the first time out haven't been real sharp. There's only been a couple of them. Teplis really did a great job tonight for us. Rowick got us out of a little jam there early on. So, you know, it's, we want to make these big decisions, but a lot of these guys are second time in the game. We're 7 games in, that's counting 3 exhibition games that guys aren't playing in. So, I'm not trying to make excuses for anybody, but we've got to get a little bit of leash. This is a really unique situation that we're dealing with.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of David Ross. He is the manager of the Chicago Cubs, and he will be on The Score this afternoon at noon with Lawrence Holmes. And you know Lawrence is going to have a good conversation with him about all these decisions, and I would imagine that Rossi will sort of echo some of the things he just said there.
I think he will. I'm trying to figure out why I'm overreacting to this, Mully, but I think that I might be a little bit overreacting to this. And I recognize that, and I just can't stop myself, though, because I feel like, number one, I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this a reaction to last year as much as it was to last night?
Right.
Because last year, you know, giving up 6 home runs or 9 home runs in 20 and two-thirds innings, that just is – you saw – last night, a pitcher who had disappointed Cubs fans so consistently last year. And I think that's what triggered maybe a reaction, or in my case, maybe an overreaction. But I just have a hard time. I wish he would have gotten an inning or two, or just maybe an inning at Wrigley Field when there wasn't as much on the line as there was last night.
It's interesting because, he put it on the line. I mean, it wasn't really on the line till he got going.
But it was safe. It was a safe situation.
Well, but still, not. I mean, what the hell was that, David?
You're right.
You look at what happened last year, and he's, even if he's better than that, he's got to be who he was before last year. That's what they paid for. He's under contract. He's not going anywhere, right? So you've got this guy. You know, he's under contract next year. He's going to be here for – you've got to find a reason to like him. And I don't know that anybody is going to. It's rough. It is a real rough one because I agree with you. I think you look at what happened last year and then you see this, and it just looks like a continuation of sorts, right?
And you wonder if that – If you wonder if his teammates have the same sort of response, and you wonder if he has the same sort of conditioned response to when he starts to put one batter on with a walk. Oh, then another batter on. And look, he walked the bases loaded. Oh, look, he hit a batter.
Wow.
So if you're David Ross and you're watching this happen, how do you watch this happen? I just think that.
Right. No, I'm with you. Hey, listen, you know, they're very fortunate. It's almost like the perfect kind of result where you get this sort of glimpse of this guy and this understanding. Well, we're not near where we need to be, but you also get a win, and you do get, you know, bailed out more or less from letting him sit there too long. It's you know, ideally he'd come in and that would be the end of it. That's what a good closer is supposed to be. But when's the last time he was like that? He really hasn't been like that with the Cubs. And the last time he was like that was with the Red Sox, and eventually they had to shut him down there. And what I'm talking about is velocity being up. I'm talking about it's being up from last year, not from when he was at his most effective, right? If you're on 96 now and you had been sitting at 98, then wait a minute. That's you're still not where you need to be, but you're just a hell of a lot better than you were a year ago. Even though
that's a good distinction. Yeah, and I think David Ross faces a bit of a conundrum here as a first-year manager, and he's the accountability guy, right? He's the guy that I'm not afraid to kick my friends in the butt, and I can do this and I can do that. Well, your closer is setting your lead on fire, okay? And so what are you going to do now? Balancing that with the credibility that you want to establish in a clubhouse for believing in the veterans, believing in guys who have accomplished things in their career, maybe not with the Cubs, but who have come, you know, to your team with a gravitas in the clubhouse and in the game. You know, Craig Kimbrell's probably, you know, going to have Hall of Fame consideration. This is one of the best closers ever, but he's not that guy now. And so you're David Ross and you're looking at this happen and you've got, you know, a team off to a good start. The next time you've got a lead and the next time Craig Kimbrell's available, I'm really cautious. I'm really going to think twice before handing the ball to him in a high leverage situation.
You just said it there. The word is accountability. I mean, when you think about where this thing lies right now, here's a guy that is supposed to be the person that's holding everyone accountable, that is demanding a certain level of performance. And now he's left trying to explain why he's staying with the guy. It puts him in a little bit of a trick box because you have to defend your guy and you have to be able to sort of explain why this happened and discuss the idea that, well, he's a closer. We haven't had that situation. He's not been in. Oh, look how long it's been. Guys get a little rusty when there's that much time. But you're just making excuses, and you're just defending a guy when you want to hold a guy accountable, and you can't. It's
incompatible for David Ross to be the guy that we have kind of portrayed him to be, and really the guy that he has been. You know, he's structure, he's urgency, he's all these things, and the accountability factor. And then he's the one who sounds, you know, like he is not yet, but it's going to sound, if he continues to go to Kimbrell and Kimbrell continues to disappoint him, like he's making excuses for the guy. So he's got to find the happy medium. It's only one night. It's only one game. And by the way, they did win. So the Cubs are 3-1.
Yeah, that's the happy news. 312-644-6767. That's the number. You're listening to Mully and Haw. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we have Riles calling in. Riles, you're on with Mully and Haw.
Hey, Riles.
Morning, fellas. Hey, why are you so down on Kimbrell? He got a hole, didn't he? Hey,
wow.
And also, I'll say this for Rossi. He did take him out. I've seen some managers that are, you know, so stubborn, they would have left the guy in and totally let him go down in flames. Yes, Kimbrell failed yesterday, but at least he took him out. And then Jeffers was no great shakes either when he went in. So something to think about, fellas.
Well, Riles, let me ask something. If you're calling in this morning to defend David Ross here, what if he hadn't taken him out? What if they had lost that game? Would you be how would you feel about that, right? I mean, didn't he have to take him out?
Absolutely he had to take him out. But that would have blown my joke if, you know.
Good stuff, Riles.
Right, buddy. Thanks, Riles. Thanks. That's pretty good.
Molly, he had to take him out, but he should have taken him out earlier. He stuck with them too long.
I agree. I don't know. You know, I don't know what it's very. He's right about that. It's not a joke. Managers will let a guy go, and they will think, well, he's going to work his way out of this one, or this is going to teach him something. But that's when you have 162 games in the season. So I'm with you. You've got to have a significantly quicker hook on that guy. And like I said, you know, you get a couple guys on base, you gotta have someone have a word with them and find out, hey, you got it, you don't got it, where you at? And then if next at bat winds up on base, hey, sorry, son, we can't wait before the runs start coming in.
This isn't a prospect you're trying to develop and whose psyche you're trying to protect. This isn't a marathon of a 162-game season where you can allow guys to fail so they succeed later. I just think you have to have a different approach because, as we keep hearing, this is a different – it's not a typical season. The schedule will dictate decisions that have to be made and, I think, conclusions that have to be accelerated. And maybe one of them is, you know, involving Craig Kimbrell and whether or not you can trust him. His velocity is there, but his command certainly isn't, and you cannot have a closer who takes the mound doubting himself, and that's what you saw last night.
And it's interesting because Kevbo points out that once you're done with the Reds, next up is Pittsburgh and then Kansas City. So if you want to rehab Craig Kimbrell's confidence, can't you do it against those two teams? Can't you let him have a break against the Reds and then, you know, start worrying about confidence
if
is?
If he can't get it done versus the Pirates and the Royals, then you got an even bigger problem on your hands.
But you want, you know, you do want the right guy in the high leverage situation, right? And that's what he supposedly is, the right guy for the high leverage situation. So you don't want to be kind of creating that. You want it to kind of come naturally. And if you're going to play those teams and beat the hell out of them, wouldn't the better scenario be not pitch him at all against either of those teams?
Well, maybe, but it's a good point because I think you want to pitch him against either the Pirates or the Royals, but you want to pitch him in a game that you're leading 7-3 or that you are trailing, you know, 5-0. Or you want to give him a mop and let him mop up, or you want to just get him some innings, get him some pitches, get him some command in situations that aren't, you know, live or die in terms of that game that night, because that's what happened last night, and he just wasn't ready for it.
But David, that is giving him the excuse that closers always use when they're in a non-close situation is, you know, oh, well, of course. Well, of course I wasn't good. It's not a high-leverage situation. I'm only here for the big moments.
I thought you hired David Ross because you were out of the excuse-making business. You know, Tom Ricketts, Theo Epstein. This is the guy that was brought here to stop enabling people, right? To get rid of the complacency, to get rid of, you know, these kind of things that we're talking about now. And I get it. It's only one outing. But if it continues, you can't have the patience that you typically can have with a veteran who has proven himself, because this is too short of a season and too fast of a sprint to tolerate that.
But I think you said it earlier. I don't think it is one outing. I think this is a continuation of last year in a lot of people's minds. And it's very difficult to think of it any other way. We don't think of it as, you know, last year the excuse was, well, he didn't get to prepare for a season, right? I mean, he had been injured and then he was holding out and he never had a spring training, and that's why this happened. So now you come back, well, you know, spring training was interrupted and he didn't. You can find excuses for anyone if you want, and some of them are legitimate. I'm not saying it isn't, but I do think that what we're talking about is what happened last year, and here it is the first time out. Oh, no. Look at this.
What we're talking about is putting the Cubs in the best position to win a game when they have a lead. And until further notice, I don't think putting Craig Kimbrell in there to protect that lead puts the Cubs in the best situation. Now, he could work it out. That may be a different story next week. Maybe a different story by the weekend. But as we sit here this morning, I don't know how you tell any other story except for Craig Kimbrell's a guy that I think lost some trust last night. And it was a continuation of last year, which is why it stood out to the degree that it did.
All right, we're going to bring in David Sampson. Want to talk to David about a number of things. Using the closer could be one of them, but definitely want to get into his old team, the Miami Marlins, and where they are right now and whether baseball has actually weathered a storm or is this thing in danger of being shut down before it's even begun. 312-644-6767, that's the number, and we'll get to your phone calls. David Sampson joins us next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I don't put this in the nightmare category. I mean, obviously, we don't want any player to get exposed. It's not a positive thing, but I don't see it as a nightmare. We built the protocols to allow us to continue to play. That's why we have the expanded rosters. That's why we have the pool of additional players. And we think we can keep people safe and continue to play.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the commissioner of baseball, and that is Rob Manfred. And we are delighted to welcome in David Sampson. David, of course, best known as one of the great executives in baseball with the Marlins and their former team president. And my goodness, he's a great podcaster, and we are always delighted to talk to him. And he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, David. How are you?
Morning, David.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm very well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing okay. And you know, we have been talking about this idea that, you know, 11 players testing positive and some coaches along at the traveling party. When you look at what's going on with the Marlins here, it seems like it's threatening the baseball season, and it seems like legitimately so. And I understand the commissioner's interested in kind of buying time, and there are protocols and there are more players, but goodness gracious, that is an extremely high number. And if another team it gets hit like that, and we're all kind of holding our breath on whether or not you can continue, and it's got to hit home for you.
Well, I think what you're seeing is that before the season started, we had this great conversation. How many players will it take for baseball to shut down? And there was never an answer because the protocols never dealt with it. The commissioner never answered. You couldn't get an executive or a player to answer. So it was very much a wait to see. So on Saturday, four Marlins tested positive, and that wasn't the answer. Because opening day, Juan Soto, he got COVID, but the game went on. And there were other players. The Atlanta Braves had their two starting catchers test positive. So two players wasn't the right answer. The games went on. Then the Marlins had four players, including their catcher. Maybe not a coincidence. The catchers are the most at risk. But that still wasn't enough. The game went on. Then we got to 11. That's when baseball said, hold on, that may be too many. Let's cancel the game or postpone the game. So we're now learning that it's a number greater than four and fewer than 11 that would cause the postponement of a game. But all of this was contemplated because, of course, there's going to be positive tests when you're not in a bubble, because, of course, the players aren't going to follow the protocols perfectly because no one can. So the show must go on. So while right now they're waiting for the Phillies to get some test results back, I think you're seeing this as a reaction to the number 11 positive tests with the Marlins. But if the Marlins only had seven, I think every game would have gone on as usual. And now each team better just be looking really hard at cleaning up their clubhouse, their visiting clubhouse.
David, in the interview with Tom Verducci on MLB Network, Rob Manfred said that he'd never discussed with the owners the possibility of canceling the season in the wake of these positive tests, and that wasn't something he necessarily wanted to consider. What did you think of that interview, and what did you want to hear from Rob Manfred that maybe you didn't?
So I'm very close. I like Commissioner Rob Manfred very much, but I must tell you, when he goes on MLB Network to do interviews, I'm not happy. I get it because MLB Network is owned by the league, and I get that you want to give that interview to your network, but it always seems as though you're getting softball questions that have been pre-approved. And this was a time for Rob to stand up in front of a group of media and explain where his head was, and then to come out and say your talking point, because you're ready for this interview, you're prepared for it. You can't have a talking point which says the clip that you played where this is not a nightmare, because people were panicked. Players were panicked. Fans were panicked because they want baseball. Everyone's nervous that the COVID is not stopping and they don't know when normalcy is going to return. And I want the commissioner to be front-facing and be the voice of reason and say, okay, we understand that we had not wanted ever to have a positive test, but we have. We have protocols in place that we are taking care of the players, first and foremost, employees and staff. We promise when we get this many positive tests, we are going to go and figure out exactly why. We're going to go to Atlanta where the Marlins were. We're going to go to Philadelphia. We're going to go to Miami, and we're going to investigate and make sure that there's never a large group like that again that tests positive. But in the meantime, we anticipated this, which is why we have 60 players available for each team to play. But we did postpone two games just to make sure that we could have the proper sequencing of events happen. That would have been a better interview to me than the soundbite that you then played.
Is there a real problem here in terms of the lag in testing time or the lag in getting results back? Or is it more about people being asymptomatic and still capable of transferring that virus, spreading it? How do you view this, what we've learned from this?
Well, you've totally nailed it, because what you said is the lagging. When that's the whole issue, and if testing isn't perfect, you knew that there could be a danger of any business starting, whether it's sports or your grocery store or airplanes or cruise ships. When you take a test and you get back either a false positive or a false negative, or it takes 12 to 24 to 48 hours, or for the real world, it takes 10 days, then those tests are not as useful. Because in that interim period, if you're not quarantined while your test is pending, then what's the use of the test? So that is something that baseball is aware of, that all sports are aware of. I think testing should be done every day. I think in my ideal world, everyone would take the field only with a negative test every single day. But we just don't have that technology right now, or it's simply not being used. Therefore, you do the best you can. And what happens is you're going to have people testing positive. Those are the risks that are happening across this entire world right now. And businesses are choosing their level of risk. Employees are choosing their comfort with their own assumption of risk. And then you've got a baseball season.
David, I want to be fair with this criticism here, because I think it needs to be addressed. And you're having such familiarity with the Marlins would be a good person to ask this. But Sunday's game should never have been played, in my opinion, after they found out that the Marlins players had tested positive. It was, I think, three at the time. And from what I understand the narrative, Don Mattingly had a team meeting and the team wanted to play. Major League Baseball's protocol should have had addressed this in a way that didn't leave it up to a team vote. And why didn't that happen? And what is the feeling down in Miami that the Marlins actually took the field and maybe made a bad situation much worse?
But you can't look at it in the rearview mirror like that. And, you know, there's a lot of attention on this meeting and this group text where the Marlins players wanted to play. The entire baseball season is predicated on the games going on even when there are positive tests. just like the Nationals played opening night after Juan Soto tested positive. Why did the Nationals play? It shouldn't matter that it's one person or four people. The question is that the rule? And it is, where the game goes on, and that's the whole purpose of the taxi squad. If you have four people who test positive, then you're playing one short because you have a three-man taxi squad when you're on the road who can immediately be in uniform. So literally it was contemplated that this would happen. There was no reason for the Marlins to have a meeting, because I guess what they could have done is forfeited the game. I guess they could have said, we don't want to play, we're not safe. But those were the protocols that were negotiated with the players. So they were ready and understanding that with positive tests that it would be play. So I don't really understand why it's getting so much attention that the Marlins players got together, because they have no say. Truthfully, they have no say. When we say there's a game, they got to show up and play a game. So either a game gets scheduled or not by Major League Baseball. So the players did not have the power to play or the power not to play. I guess they could forfeit and they could stage a sit out and not show up. But other than that, I'm not sure what all the hullabaloo is about.
I think it really comes down to this idea that they voted on it, as simple as that. That, you know, do they not understand there's an outbreak going on with your team when you get to a certain number, and now that outbreak has even grown since then. But I think the fact that they voted, like, this is not a sprained ankle, it's not a, you know, I'm going to play through it, oh, this is okay. That's, I think, what is confusing to everyone. Why did you need a player vote? If as you say, they have no say in it, I think that's why everyone's getting hung up on it.
And remember, it was 4, not 11 at that time.
Right.
There were 4 players who they were missing, and they feel as though, like every team and every person, that I'm doing what's right. I'm being smart. I'm wearing my mask correctly. I'm staying social distanced. But remember, there was a red flag with the Marlins way going back to when they were in Atlanta for the exhibition games, when Don Mattingly went public saying, I'm not satisfied with how the Braves and the visiting clubhouse was set up, because we had a problem during this rain delay, but it'll get fixed. It'll all be okay. That was Don Mattingly publicly last week, which then means that baseball's got to step in and say to the Braves, if your clubhouse is not ready, we're not going to let you play, and you are going to have to forfeit games because we're not going to let visiting teams come in there. And so there are things that baseball could be doing, and they will be doing now because of this outbreak with the Marlins, but one of them, in my opinion, is not canceling or suspending the season. It's getting teams to comply with the rules that were negotiated to begin with.
In that vein, then, David, before we let you go, how shaken is your confidence that Major League Baseball will be able to complete its 60-game season?
It's the same level it was before the Marlins outbreak, and people are finding it hard to believe that that's my stance, but it is, because it was contemplated. So my bigger concern is that will the commissioner say if 15 teams are missing 11 players at once and the players who are playing in the games are not representative of the major league product and the competitive integrity has been compromised, that is what will cause the season to be suspended and then move into maybe some sort of bubble format in October for the playoffs. I think if baseball is smart, they're working on the potential of a bubble playoff. Somehow, somewhere, they've got some time to do it. It's difficult to pull off, but the NBA so far is doing it. The NHL is just starting their bubble. The WNBA looks to be doing it as well. It's not going to be perfect. Players violate bubbles. We've seen it, but the NBA has very strict rules, and they're calling out players who, and I don't just mean the fish line, but they're calling out players who violate the bubble, and they're being serious about quarantine. And it's easier to do that in a bubble. You can't do that during a regular season.
David, thanks a ton. Really appreciate the insights. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Good stuff.
Hey, have a great day, guys. Thank you.
You too.
That's David Sampson. That is fascinating. And you know, again, I think that the problem you have with the Marlins is that, you know, they've had more than 10% of their traveling party come down with COVID-19. Do we know that's it? Do we know that that's going to stop there with all these cases?
Not yet. We don't know
yet. We're waiting the 36 hours to figure out how many people there are, right?
We are, and we're waiting to find out exactly how many more games, if any more games, are affected by this outbreak. And I use that term, and maybe that's the wrong term, but I think more than four seems like an outbreak.
That's an outbreak. There's I don't know how else you'd define it, honestly. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.